Now it's time to get the latest from the quarterback of the pack, Aaron Rodgers. It's Tuesdays with Aaron. Here's your host, Jason Wilde.
Bum, 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 bum.
It is the Aaron Rodgers Show. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, the 14-1 Packers, as they rebound from their first loss and prove that there maybe isn't a blueprint after all. How are you?
Good.
How's your gum?
A little much, I think. Same on my volume here.
How was your Christmas?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. Had the family in. Yeah, I don't think it could have gone any better.
Now, I know Luke does even more tweeting than I do, I think, so I missed this, but Bill sent me an email about it. Apparently you guys had some fun with something called the Yearbook app he was tweeting about. Apparently, are there some funny like yearbook photos of you guys as youths, or what is that?
My little brother got us posters, and there's some yearbook app that you can use and plug in a face and change the hairstyle, and mine is me with some sort of mullet, and same with my brothers. So just some fun with that app.
So you didn't have to go to the team hotel on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Your family came into town. Did you get any good gifts?
Yeah, I got plenty of good ones. I like giving gifts a little bit better, though.
That's actually one of the Ask Aaron questions, so a little foreshadowing.
Okay, we'll just stop there then.
Speaking of gifts, though, and apparently my friend Kyle and I are the only two people who didn't know this, you got your offensive lineman a gift for Christmas?
Yeah, I did. I've, again, with a lot of my stuff I like to do, I like to keep kind of under my hat,
yes,
per se, but in the past, I've done some gift giving. When I was a backup, I used to give gifts to the scout team players. Everything from televisions to laptops, and I know those guys have always appreciated those. I want to make sure the linemen got something real good this year. So it was kind of a graduated gift scale, but the older guys got watches, and the next tier was nice laptops, and the following tier was the rookies got TVs.
Are you a watch guy? Do you wear watches a lot? I feel like now with cell phones, people don't wear watches as much.
No, I think I enjoy a nice watch. I bought one watch for myself. I've got a couple others as gifts, but I'm not a crazy watch guy.
Well, you spent Christmas Day night earning the NFC's number one playoff seed. How does it feel to have that and to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs?
Well, it feels good. You know, I think it's more that we just played the way we wanted to after disappointment in Kansas City, and kind of hearing a lot of garbage all week about how people figured out to beat us now, and we're more vulnerable than ever, and somebody, I think, mentioned we're the third best team in NFC now, behind New Orleans and San Fran. And, I think I just kind of a little bit of a laugher for us there, listening to some of that garbage this week. But good to get back on the right track. It's always, it's always difficult playing your division opponents, and to put up that kind of points against them was pretty special.
How does that kind of stuff motivate you? Because, I mean, you're obviously, you guys are professionals, and it's not like you wouldn't prepare that week. But I don't think it has any impact on necessarily how you play on game day, but does it maybe get guys to be a little more focused during the week? They want to prove that to be, garbage?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to ask each individual player. It's more just a reminder of how fickle some of the media can be, and I think it's on some levels important to kind of know what's being said out there, but at the same time, I think you have to separate yourself from a lot of those negative comments and also the positive ones too. You can't always read all your own press clippings or regardless how they're going, positive or negative. There's been a lot of positive stuff this year. I think we were on a streak of winning there. There comes a point where you're 14 and. Well, I guess you're 10-0 at some point, and people trying to tear you down, and then you finally lose one, and people trying to tear you down even more, and then you win one again, and people make excuses for the Bears.
Darn media, I hate those guys.
I know.
This blows me away that you've won a Super Bowl, you're about to play in your third postseason in a row as a starter, and you've never played in a home game at Lambeau Field in the playoffs. Is that, I mean, because you guys took the path you did to the Super Bowl last year, I understand why, but are you looking forward to, I mean, you were obviously on the team for playoff games in 07, but...
I got on the field in one of those.
Okay, but are you looking forward to your first playoff game as a starter at Lambeau Field?
No, I am. I think everybody knows how the atmosphere changes in the playoffs. The intensity of not only the play on the field but in the stands picks up, and I think it's a tough place to play. Lambeau is, especially when the crowd's into it, nice and loud. And you remember the Giants game and the Seahawks game 2007. We had a real lively crowd, and it's difficult to play on the road in the playoffs. And then you bring the elements in. If you look at the 3 through 6 seeds, with putting Dallas, Dallas and Giants is still up in the air, but 3 through 6, the majority are indoor teams. So, got to come to San Fran and Green Bay in the winter time. It's difficult to play. So we like the advantage.
As you guys well proved last year, home field advantage is no guarantee of anything, but. Given how good you are in domes and how precise your offense is, do you still believe that you're a cold weather team and that is a significant advantage for you?
I think it can be, yeah. I think I think it's not as big an advantage when we go on the road into a dome environment because we have the players and the ability to move the ball through the air effectively and the speed to cover people and to play well enough on defense to stop the opponent. A lot of teams that play indoors are built for the indoors. You always said that about the Rams of the Kurt Warner years, the greatest show on turf. Obviously say that about the Indianapolis teams with Peyton and how well they played indoors. The Saints are on a roll, and their team is predicated on a lot of speed, especially with the addition of a guy like Darren Sproles.
Wow, he was pretty good last
year. Yeah, he was. Man, he's pretty special. But we like the elements. We've played in them. We've won in them before, and look forward to the opportunity to host a playoff game.
Two of the things you always talk about are wind and then footing. From where I was sitting, 7 floors up, it did look a little bit slippery out there. Was it? How's the track? And I know you say that the defense doesn't know where your guys are going, mm-hmm. so they're at a disadvantage. But do you have any concern at all about the footing?
I think you just have to learn what type of footwear reacts the best to the surface, and that comes from playing on a surface for a while, and then also just giving into maybe a really really comfortable pair of shoes you might like that reacts well on other surfaces. Each field is different. From, Chicago and what they got working, and us, and a field like San Diego's, Tampa Bay's, there's a lot of outdoor fields that really have different grass dynamics.
How do you figure those out? Like, do you go out in pregame and try different shoes,
yeah.
or is it history?
I think you have to go out there and try out different shoes. I've always been a guy who enjoys wearing my Destroyers indoors.
Right.
With the little nubs on the bottom. That having enough traction with those, and then outdoors, I've been a 7 stud guy my entire, from high school on down. Some guys like the molded cleats, the way they feel. They wear those on grass surfaces and artificial grass surfaces. I've always been a 7 stud kind of guy, so it's just changing the length of those cleats.
What does Matt Flynn wear, and does he get what he did?
He sat on the bench after he slipped. He's a molded guy. So he was saying, I probably have to go to the 7 stud model.
Do you tease him when something like that happens, or do you not?
You tease him if you watch the film together, which we had a Victory Monday, so we didn't watch it together. But
so not when it actually happens.
No, I mean, Matty's my buddy, and I was happy he got to get in there a little bit. Yeah, he was. You know, we were laughing about how he was saying, you know, if I just get my cleats in the ground there, I'm definitely juking Tillman. I'm excited for him and his opportunities coming up in the coming years, potentially this week. You never know what's going to happen, but we've got a great relationship, and there was some teasing at some point, but you got to tread a little lightly at sometimes.
You're such a good radio guy now. That's called a segue. Let's talk about the Lions on Sunday. Has Mike McCarthy given you any indication? Because I know there's some privileged information that you may get that others don't. Or
I got to be careful. I don't know if some people from ESPN are listening that might take that out of context.
Has he given you any indication what the game plan is for the Lions in terms of who plays how much and when?
No, he has not. I have not had a conversation with him about that. Like I said, after the game, potentially it could be a good opportunity for Matt to get some playing time, but potentially we could play this like a normal game and play the entire time. There's some guys we're trying to get back from injuries that, you know, Mike Mayer may not want to see on the field playing, see how their status would be for that divisional round game. But, you know, it's entirely up to Mike and his staff, and whatever he decides, we're gonna do.
What do you want to do? Not telling Mike what you think he should do, because I assume part of you wants to play, and like you said, you want to see your friend get an opportunity and Matt Flynn to play in a game that counts and not be just doing it in garbage time where you basically get the hand off until the clock runs out.
I think every player wants to play and wants to have an impact on the game. As we made our run, undefeated, you know, everybody wanted to finish out that thing and play all the way through. So if we'd been sitting here at 15-0, we'd want to play it through and finish it out strong. Now we're, 14-1, having them one seed locked up, but you love to play. You get paid to play and you enjoy being on the field. But I'm very, very coachable, I think, and whatever Mike, and Joe and Tom decide as far as the quarterback room status, that's what's going to go. So I don't have any information on that. I don't know that he's going to make a decision today or tomorrow or Friday or Saturday, whenever it might be, but I'm going to prepare as if I'm going to play and play a lot.
You have more important things to do than I do. So we were talking about on our radio show this morning, does it come into play at all thinking you can't change your playoff seeding, but the Lions can. They could be the 5 or the 6. The 6 would, the 5 and the 6 would obviously play different teams. There's a matchup question with the NFC East champion, whether that's maybe an easier matchup for one of the two wild cards, given the way they've played. Does that any of that factor in of keeping the Lions from being the 5th seed, do you think? Or is that, look, we're going to play who we're going to play?
I think it's we're going to play who we're going to play. Being the top seed as opposed to the 2 seed, regardless, it's not like a basketball playoffs where 1 and 2 get byes, the winner of 3-6 plays 2, and the winner of 4-5 plays 1. The highest seed remaining will play us in Green Bay, and the next highest seed will play in San Francisco if they win. We know that if Atlanta wins and we beat the Lions, Atlanta will be the 5 seed, the Lions will be 6. That means they'll go to either San Fran or New Orleans. You talked about with the NFC East champ. It's tough to win on the road. You know, there's been a few teams. We've done it. The Giants did it as a 5 seed, went to the Super Bowl. We did a 6 seed. The Steelers, I believe, did it as a 6 seed as well in the AFC. But that's a tough road to go. We're glad we're at home, and it's tough to win on the road in the playoffs.
One other thing about how you approach this game. You've got a bye week after this. As a player, how much do you think you need to play to stay sharp? Because you obviously, if you didn't play at all, that would be a couple of weeks where you were not playing at all, and then you'd be playing on January 14th or 15th.
I don't feel like that that there's a set number of plays you have to play or really any to be ready to play in the playoffs. I think that enough practice reps, is all you need. You look at the last preseason game and where you go from playing maybe 40 snaps in the third preseason game to, less than 10.
One game you played one.
I played one against the Tennessee Titans that 1 year. Yeah. So I don't think it's a lot of plays. I mean, we've played up until this point 19 games, kind of preseason. I think once we get on the field, we know how to get it done. So it's up to Mike, though.
Well, one guy who Mike said needs to play is Chad Clifton, who hasn't played since his hamstring injury on October 9th, and he hurts his back. I'm wondering, are you excited to see him back there? I know you're happy and you feel good about what Marshall has done stepping in. I would argue that he's come through for you guys in a big way, even though he's been a little inconsistent. How do you kind of view that left tackle spot, and what would it mean to get Cliffy back?
Well, again, that's not my decision who's going to ultimately play there. Can't say enough about the job that Marshall's done. Again, starting the season out, didn't look at Marshall the way I look at him now. I look at him now as a guy who really has a strong, legitimate chance to be the left tackle of the future. I think he has the personality makeup to do that, the athletic ability to do that, the feet, and the smarts to be a very, very solid left tackle for us. Chad has been a guy who's been so consistent for us for years. Getting him back would mean, either depth or a guy who can be plugged in right away and play. Mike has mentioned he'd like to see Chad play some plays this week in order to know if he can go with him in the playoffs. That being said, whoever's in their left tackle, there'll be a lot of confidence. And, again, I thought Marshall played his butt off Sunday against the Bears, and I'm not surprised. It's not a performance that surprised me when he goes out there and plays the way he does.
Did it surprise you at all? You called your offensive line the real MVPs of that game. You've got good players there who've played, but you did do some juggling. I mean, TJ's over at right tackle, Evans in the game. Were you expecting, and were you a little apprehensive early on to see how the line was going to gel since it was kind of rejiggered there?
No, I was. I was hopeful that we would get off to the kind of start we wanted to. I think the first drive was key to set a tempo for us. And they started getting tired. We got things rolling, went down and scored a touchdown. That was important for us, get that confidence. More than that, though, I think they really got settled into the game on that first drive with the things that the Bears are trying to do. We mixed up under center and gun and mixed up a screen in there and some draws and tried to keep them off balance that way. Didn't have to do maybe as much chipping with a tight end like Jermichael or back as maybe we thought we would, because they really settled in quickly. And they protected really well. So they were the MVPs of the game. I think Scotty at center has been as consistent as you've seen in the league. TJ has had a great season. I mean, he's been a potential Pro Bowl left guard who moved to right tackle. Josh obviously played well. And then you look at Evan, his ability to step in, really proud of him and his development this year. And Marshall Newhouse has had a great season for us at tackle. So
you mentioned Pro Bowl. The teams are announced this evening on Tuesday. You were snubbed last year. I think you've been pretty honest about how you feel about personal awards, that they don't mean that much to you, but you're also a competitive guy. Is it important to you to get named? I know you don't want to play in the game because that would mean that you weren't playing in the Super Bowl. How do you feel about the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's important. No doubt about it. I think last year the biggest disappointment to me was when you're voted second by the fans, who have one-third of the vote, and you know a little bit about mathematics, that tells you that you were voted no higher than fourth by the players and the coaches. So to think about that there's at least three guys that were voted ahead of me last year and potentially four or five, that's probably the most disappointing thing that came out of last year's Pro Bowl voting. This year, I believe I'm first among the fans.
So first among players at every position.
Well, I would have to be voted very low by the players and coaches to not make the Pro Bowl. So we'll see what happens.
Now, you guys did your voting already, obviously.
Yeah.
Mike Flanagan once told me that he tried to organize kind of a, I don't want to call it stuff, the opposite of stuffing the ballot box, voting for guys that they didn't believe were in any way, shape, or form deserving to help their own guys with their vote. You can't do that, can you? I mean, you guys.
Sure you can. Sure you can.
Do you?
I don't. I honestly don't. I vote for deserving people. I think often there's too much name recognition that goes on. I would say maybe more than doctoring it. So young guys go, which does happen. For sure it happens.
Really?
I think there's more guys who really don't know what they're doing, receivers voting for defensive tackles or linebackers based on name recognition only. And that's how some guys get in. There was an adage that you get in the Pro Bowl a year after you probably should,
right?
And you're voted in a year. What is it?
A year longer than
a year longer than you deserve. I think that's what it is. Yeah. So there's a lot of name recognition that goes into it. Whether you agree with that or not.
You talked about how you would reform the scouting combine last week. How would you reform the Pro Bowl voting? Would you have scouts do it? I mean, they're not going to change it. I think we agree that it's not going to change.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a whole lot you can do unless you just vote. You whittle down the voting even more, saying that receivers can only vote for defensive backs and running backs can only vote for defensive tackles and linebackers. Then you still maybe give the quarterbacks the ability to vote for all players. But I don't think there's a whole lot you can do. I think the system's pretty good.
Two more things before we go to our only break here on the Aaron Rodgers Show. One, who do you think deserves to go to the Pro Bowl from your team?
That's putting me in a tough situation. But I think that...
I'm assuming you feel like there's a fairly long list.
I think there is a fairly long list. I think a couple people who are on the bubble right now who probably really deserve to be in. Clay Matthews is one. Clay is not going to have the numbers that maybe a Jason Babin does or DeMarcus Ware, but he's been probably our most consistent player on defense all year with the attention that he desires. Not maybe having the same kind of not having Jenkins inside has probably hurt us a little bit there. Obviously, Jason Babin. I'm hoping he got Cullen a good Christmas gift because he's probably been his biggest asset there. But Clay Matthews, Jordy Nelson, I think he's had a phenomenal season, averaging a ton of yards per catch. I've been so consistent for us. I think he's my efficiency when throwing to him is somebody told me, I think they told me in the production meeting last week is the highest in the league as far as passer rating from quarterback to receiver. And that's directly related to his ability to catch the ball and do something with it after he catches it. And then, two other guys that really deserve strong consideration are B.J. Raji, who's been very consistent, and Josh Sitton.
Do you think Scott Wells gets in?
Isn't he leading the fans?
I think he's got a good shot. That doesn't get as much credit as he deserves as a player.
I think I'm hopeful that as in past years, maybe just what comes to mind is the 2007 season where the Dallas Cowboys had 9 or 10 selections, maybe more, and a lot of that was due to the fact that they finished 14-2 that season, I believe. Hopefully that, us being 14-1, have the best record in the league. That should warrant enough attention for our guys who are really deserving. I didn't mention Scott because I feel like he's a guy who, based on his play and his recognition, finally is going to make it.
Yeah, well, you were talking about guys on the bubble. I didn't think you figured he was on the bubble. Last thing, you watched the game last night?
Yeah.
Obviously saw Drew Brees set the record or break Dan Marino's record. He's still got one game to go. There was a lot of talk about the MVP race. I have never asked you about the MVP on this show, but I'm going to ask you now, what does that mean to you? Is it important to you to win it? And how much does it enter your thinking?
It's not something that really enters my thinking during a week or even really up until you think about this being the last game of the season. Is it important to me? I think it would be definitely something that would be cool to receive, knowing it's an individual award that reflects a successful team, I think. And us being 14-1 and having the kind of year we've had, me being a part of that, one part of it, would be special to receive some recognition for being a part of something special.
Still ahead, we'll go inside the helmet from Sunday night's victory over the Chicago Bears. We'll look ahead to Detroit. And we will take your Ask Aaron questions. You are listening to The Aaron Rodgers Show. We enter the second half of The Aaron Rodgers Show. We deferred the kickoff. Hey, how about the...
Surprising. Very surprising.
How about that? I would have never thought that the Bears would do that.
Yeah, I think defer. It was probably because we've deferred and not taken the ball for a bunch of weeks in a row. I was really surprised. They won the toss, and I saw DeFur. I said, "Whoa, better get my helmet here. We're going out there.
We haven't done it in a while." Do you like the fact that you guys defer? We've talked a little bit about it on the show.
I love it. I really do. I think for whatever reason, it fits our personality. We send our defense out first. They haven't always stopped them. There's been some early drives with scores, but I love the ability to double up, as we call it, where you get the last possession in the first half, get points, and then get the first possession coming out of the second half. We've done that over the last few years a couple times, and it's had a huge impact on the game. Look at the Minnesota game at Minnesota. What was that? Was it last year? We doubled up on them?
Yes.
Yeah, 10-3, we drove down, we scored in the first half to make it 17-3. The first possession, the second half, came out and scored again. It goes from a one-score game to a three-score game without them touching the ball.
Now, you didn't obviously get the ball back when you scored with 16 seconds left this week because they deferred. Mm-hmm. But think of, you go 14-3 on the touchdown to Jones. If you get the ball back to start the third quarter and put it in again, that's how games get out of hand quickly.
Yep.
Let's go inside the helmet. I have a long list, and my attitude is very good about these this week, but there are a couple of negative ones in here.
Go ahead.
Inside the helmet, the first one I wanted to ask you about, there was a throw to JerMichael down the middle of the field, down the seam, where it looked like it was classic, the challenge for a quarterback to make that throw in the cover two, because Urlacher is dropping and you kind of have to kind of drop it in between a bunch of defenders. How tough is that when you're going against the cover or the Tampa two?
It depends on how the linebacker's playing it. Brian has been known to play a little bit flat at times in that Tampa two. They mix up the way they play. Sometimes he plays a little flatter. Safeties play a little tighter. And the corners carry a little bit more. So it almost looks like a cover four, where each corner and safety has a quarter of the field. Then sometimes he gets a lot of depth, and he relies on his two spot droppers, DJ Moore and Lance Briggs, to cover up the underneath stuff. We noticed early in the game he was playing a little bit flat, so when I got the opportunity, I wanted to make sure I took a shot down the middle. It is a tough throw. I missed JerMichael probably by about a foot of where I wanted to put that ball. Anytime you throw into a big fella like that, it's kind of the tight end and fullback rule, where you want to give them when they're running full speed, a ball that's easily caught, which really means something in the chest area, no higher than the head. And that ball was over his head about a foot, and difficult catch, especially knowing you're going to take a shot. So just missed that one.
Quick sidelight to that. You've told us before that the Tampa 2 and that being the Bears' signature is kind of a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
What did they play mostly?
A lot of man.
Why does that happen? I mean, I'm not asking you.
It's the blueprint.
I'm not asking you to explain what Lovie Smith's thinking is, but that doesn't jibe with kind of what we envision that defense being.
I think many of the Tampa 2 defenses, even when Tampa Bay itself was
running. You've had
running.
More problems with that bottle cap.
I know, the bottle cap's going everywhere. But even when Tampa Bay was running a ton of Tampa 2, as the name implies, it's still going to be a lot of one-high coverages. So playing cover three, we're playing man coverage. You're going to see a lot of that. I think as ESPN and the experts told us this last week, the blueprint to beat us was get pressure with four and play a lot of man coverage. Which a lot of teams have tried to do. And the Bears tried to do some of that as well, playing some cover three and some man coverage. They wanted to make sure that they were jumping their crossing routes, especially JerMichael when he was running across the field. Line held up. We blocked their four really well, and were able to make some plays down the field.
The next play I want to ask you about, I've been dying to ask you about it since it actually occurred, and ask you how hard it was to stifle a smile. Talk about the run you had where you split between Urlacher and Briggs.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a purely reactionary play where I knew we had to probably get about six. I think it was third and six or so, wasn't it?
Third and five.
Third and five, long five.
I'm just going by the official book.
Thank you, yes. And once I broke, kind of got out of the pocket, As I do from time to time, I'll make a pump fake that really isn't supposed to fool anybody, just more to serve another purpose. So the pump fake in this sense allowed me to take my eyes to the left to see how far I had to get for the first down. And in a split second, you get a little nervous because you know you're probably going to have to take a shot here or make somebody miss to get it because it was a longer than I expected. And it was just really my one move that I have, which is kind of the right-left-right, the right-left-right juke, and was able to pick my knee up. For some reason, as I was about to get tackled, I was able to kind of pick my knee up a la Roger Craig, although I apologize to Roger Craig if he's listening, because it was nowhere near any high step that Roger Craig has ever done. His running style obviously was famous for his high knees. Anyway,
I remember
just reactionary.
I'm with you there.
Just kind of put my right foot down and moved to the left to Urlacher, and then Briggs was kind of coming for me and somehow moved back to the right, picked my knee up, and got through him.
So were you in danger there? Because we know you need to be a little bit careful about that, and as great of an athlete as you are. And then
yeah.
What did you think when you saw Briggs actually take Urlacher?
I didn't see that. I didn't see that. I just noticed that that Brian was out. Glad to see him come back in the game there. But I have a nice little bruise actually from Briggs's elbow around my upper thigh, which is not a padded area. I think I'll be okay. It reminds me about the one athletic play I made in the game.
The touchdown to Jordy. Now I feel like we've talked about these kind of play action deep shots that you've taken. It's been a play that's worked well for you. Was this like previous ones, or are these all a little bit different?
They're all different. They're all different. Different types of action. The routes may end up looking kind of similar, but it's all different stuff. And it's reads. I have a read. They have reads. But it's just that's a fun play because two guys are in the same spot with a landmark in mind based on the final look that we got, me reading his body language and putting the ball kind of exactly where I wanted it. So those are fun to watch in the air, and I find myself taking my eyes off the ball and looking at Jordy's body language to see if he's going to catch it. The majority of the time, he's kind of cruising because the ball is not one that's going to make him sell out all the way to the football. This one, he had the jets on for a while, so I was a little nervous as the ball was dropping that he wasn't going to get there, but it sure looked pretty.
Boy, and he made the safety look less than athletic the way he ran that route too. He got on top of him quickly and went past him. You did the belt after that though, did you not?
Yeah, I did.
What happened there? I thought A, you're going away from it, and B, that's not a touchdown run.
Yeah, I was just kind of really fired up by that one. Those are the fun ones there where you, to throw it as far as we threw it there and to put it exactly where you want it. I don't know. That was just a fun one.
What about the touchdown to Jones? What happened on that? I think it's the second one, because it looked like you're kind of yelling to either him or someone else on the side. It's hard to tell on the TV copy, but before the snap, you look like you're communicating to someone to your left, and I think that's where James was lined up. Were you yelling to him, or is this not ringing a bell? Am I not?
No, that's not really ringing. Which one? Was it the fade route or the slant route? The 2 yard or the 7 yard?
The 7 yarder. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't at the end of the half, was it?
No.
No, it was the yeah,
third quarter, right?
The snap, it looks like
third quarter.
Like you're kind of telling them where to go, or you're directing some sort of pre-snap traffic, and then maybe you even said something after the touchdown.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about. That was just a 3-by-1 set where we had a guy in motion, we had a combination routes. We might have been making sure the protection was good with John, but
sorry, hi.
Just two guys on the same page there.
Apparently, I'm not on the same. That's my bad.
That's okay.
Because here I had a segue going, because the next question and the final play was going to be, I don't think you're starting to run the option, and I don't think you're Tim Tebow. So what happened on the two different runs where you ended up running The first one, I think Grant was the back, and the second one, James was. He didn't look very happy with James.
Yeah, just a new player we're putting in where I just – the back goes one way, and I go the other way, and then fall down after 1 yard. looking at there, and that's why we had him in motion. We knew that we were running the ball to the tight end side, and both times I came back, and John was going the right way, and the running back wasn't. So that happens from time to time in practice, usually like in a training camp or a walkthrough where you got some young guys in there and maybe make a check they haven't heard before, or maybe they weren't paying attention on the install, and you just kind of turn it back up there and run in there, and they kind of tag you off or whatever. Not as much fun when you know that they're coming to try and hit you hard. You do have both plays, unfortunately, look like they're going to be 6 or 7 yard gains, bare minimum, for the back. Then you get me in there trying to make that left-hand turn to get back going straight again. It looked pretty bad.
So
but,
what's going through your mind when you turn around to hand the ball off and the guy's not there? Oh, shit.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Ryan. James. I'll just turn this up here. And then the second one, I actually made a little juke, and John was getting on me. He called me into the film room yesterday when I just finished watching. He goes, hey, look at what play I'm on. He goes, why don't you be a better athlete and stay up here and get a couple yards? I'm blocking my guy. If I would have stayed up, I'm running on the safety. I might get 5 or 6 yards, but in that situation, you're just trying to get down. I feel bad, though, because I apologize to James, too, because – I tell you, James Starks is the absolute, probably nicest guy in the facility. I mean, anybody who knows James, ever spent time with him, interviewed him, I mean, he personifies the happy-go-lucky term. I mean, he is always in a good mood and always excited to be wherever he's at. And I love the kid. I mean, he is a phenomenal talent and just a joy to work with. So I feel bad when I got on him because I was more mad that it happened twice.
Right.
Not really mad at him. But I couldn't believe it happened twice. So I apologize to him for kind of getting on him a little bit because he's such a great guy.
So Ryan would have gotten it just as bad had the
for sure.
It been reversed.
Yeah.
Let's look ahead to Detroit. You just faced them on Thanksgiving. We talked about what may or may not be the approach. What do you see from them? And does a team change much defensively between November 24th and January 1st?
No, they don't change a whole lot, but you know, they're playing really well. They got a great defense. They got a lot of guys that can get after the passer. Their linebackers are playing well. The back end is playing a lot better this year. They're going to have a number of Pro Bowlers on that team. It's a tough challenge. They're playing real well. It'll be interesting to see how they approach it from a health standpoint, because I know Eric Wright got banged up a little bit, so I don't know what his status is going to be. There's talent as they come on defense.
What conversation would you predict you have with Kyle Vandenbosch, who apparently has now heard your imitation? How do you think that exchange is going to go?
You know what? I got to give Kyle a lot of credit. I listened to his response of the conversation, and they actually played my impression of him, my poor impression of him. And Kyle's comments was, that's exactly how the conversation went. And that never happens. It never happens where you're kind of getting on a guy for the way he talks and his intensity. And he came back and said, yep, that's exactly what happened. So I got to give him a lot of credit for that, for his honesty. I've always respected the way he plays. He's a ferocious defender, and he plays snap the whistle. I like to tease. We like to tease about how he kind of lays on guys, but that's just because he's chasing the play down from the backside. He's probably just resting a little bit. So I can't be mad at him about that. But he's a fierce, ferocious athlete and a guy who's been doing it for a long time. So a lot of respect for him. More respect that he, didn't feel it was necessary to take any shots or try and refute what I said. And if we're out there and have a conversation, I look forward to, I hope he's not laying on me after just rocking me, on a hit, but I look forward to the conversation with him.
So he and Mark Sanchez have both, while others have maybe tried to make a big deal out of a few things you've said, they both kind of, they've been okay with you.
Yes.
Let's do Ask Aaron. If you want to get involved, you can always do it via the Twitter hashtag Ask Aaron. The first one comes from Chris. Knowing you, I don't know how well Chris knows you, But he says you'd rather give than receive at Christmas, so he's right.
True.
Given your means, do you feel any added pressure to get your relatives the perfect gift?
I think just in general, because I enjoy giving gifts so much, I do feel pressure to give a great gift. I think you have to temper that with not trying to show up anybody else who's giving gifts, because obviously the means that the Lord has provided me with allow me to maybe have a different spending budget on gifts than other people, and trying to weigh that when giving a gift, I think is very important, just so you don't trump someone else who really is giving an important gift. I think this year I tried to do some sentimental gifts, some ones that maybe didn't have the retail value of something that would be an expensive, flashy gift, but something that really means something intrinsically to the person I gave it to.
Can you give us
an example? Really want to give any examples.
Were you on like Shutterfly making a bug?
No, my
for
little
your
brother
mom?
Used Shutterfly. I did make a few books on my Mac through the iPhoto. It has an option, and those are a lot of fun. It's fun to put together the pictures and the writing and the different fonts and colors you can use. And
I got to tell you that, and that means a lot. Like Paula did the same thing for me, and that means a lot more to me because A, it took you the time to do it, and B, there's a sentimental value there.
Yep.
In looking at those old pictures. The next one comes from Wes. I know you're a big NBA guy. The Bucks have their home opener tonight. Are you going to make it down there? And are you excited that the lockout is over?
I won't. I will be down very shortly. Disappointed about what happened last night, but excited about the Bucks this season. Excited about Mike Dunleavy, Steven Jackson, obviously Brandon. I think it's going to be a good team. Big Drew Gooden fan. Excited to see him. I actually, one of my favorite birthday presents was, did I mention this already? Kevin got me a sign. He got in touch with Drew Gooden's people, got me a signed Drew Gooden jersey. Because I always whoop him on NBA 2K12 with the Bucks and Drew Gooden run the offense through Drew. So excited about that. It's on my wall in my office. And big Drew Gooden fan. Big Bucks fan. Can't wait to watch him.
I do think you got to talk to Brandon Jennings, though, because I don't watch SportsCenter very often, but it was on after the game last night. And he did kind of the Cam Newton was at the game, and he did kind of the Superman pull the suit off. I think he's supposed to be doing the belt, isn't he? I mean, isn't it supposed to stay?
Well, we got Steven Jackson now. Steven did the belt last
belt
year.
Guy?
I think he's I sent him a little jersey down, and I'm excited about watching Steven. Been a big fan this for a while. Was so excited when they got him.
Scott wants to know, and I see you're wearing one, where do you get your hats from? I recognized Nixon, but what are the others that you wear?
I believe this is a, what is it, Von Zipper?
There's a V and a Z on it.
Yeah, this is the Von Zipper hat. Just some connections over the years. I am sponsored by Nike. So I wear a lot of Nike stuff, but, to get different stuff from Etnies or Von Zipper or, different companies that I wear my One Hope stuff, One Hope Wine Company that I'm a part of. So different things.
I excuse the old guy question here. Are those, they kind of look skateboardy. Is that kind of the vibe that they're intended in?
Yeah, but I think the skateboardish has become a little bit more mainstream.
Sure.
It's less alternative wear or alternative lifestyle stuff and more kind of the relaxed, I hate to say West Coast-ish feel.
That would have been my next phrase that I was going to use.
Yeah, if you want to use it, go ahead. Yeah.
The next one, there's actually two. They're on the same plane, and they continue with the fashion. Anna wants to know, would you consider yourself a fashion icon? How do you pick your game day attire? And then Joey wonders, what is your methodology for your post-game interview attire? Hat versus no hat, shirt and tie versus hoodie, or hoodie this week. Is there any protocol, or is it just how you feel?
That's a great question. There's a lot of things that come into play there. In the past, I've been a suit and tie guy. I've also been a different look kind of guy. I got made fun of for my Life Aquatic look, which wasn't a red hat, but it was a black hat, worn in the Life Aquatic way. If you've seen the movie,
yes.
I think you'd appreciate that. I think if anybody listens to the show, hopefully you realize I don't take myself that seriously. I enjoy mustaches and facial hair and doing interviews about mustaches and the like. But needless to say, This season, for whatever reason, I had this pair of jeans that I wore the first game. It was a home game. I usually don't wear suits to the home games. We won, played well, and just I actually wore the same pair of jeans the entire season.
Really?
Up until we lost. Yeah, not superstitious or anything. I am, but the hoodie I wore during the game or after the game was a gift. That brings me to another personal policy. One is that I don't buy anything for myself after Thanksgiving. I have my birthday December 2nd and Christmas, but that's one rule I live by in the holiday season. And two is that I enjoy wearing gifts. So if I'm given a gift, let me just rephrase that. If I'm given a gift by a family member or friend that I'm going to see, I am going to wear that. So my brother got me that hoodie. I liked it. I wore it to the stadium, and I had a couple different options. Sometimes I wear some Green Bay Packer logoed stuff. Nothing really matched the blue undershirt I was wearing, so I just kept the hoodie on.
Speaking of being superstitious, my friend Mickey tells me, and this is something I've never noticed, you have a pregame ritual with Driver at the end of warm-ups. Is that true?
Yeah, it's kind of grown into a pregame ritual. I started it a few years ago.
Tell people what it is, because
one thing that I started a couple years ago was I would run like a little route into the end zone, off of my handoff fake, and Coach Locum throws me a pass.
Again, showing your athleticism.
Right, there you go. So I just would always catch a pass. Well, Donald started to be in the end zone, catching balls down there in the corner of the end zone, because the last personnel group is our goal line personnel. So for whatever reason, I would be down there in the corner of the end zone, catch the ball, and sometimes spin it. Well, he started challenging my spin-off. So we spin the ball on its point on the ground and see whose spin can last longer, I guess.
What's your record?
I think I'm beating him this year pretty good.
Okay. Bill wants to know, you mentioned this in postgame, in that big Shasta game in 2002, who were the starters on defense for Shasta, and what were their strengths and weaknesses?
That's tough.
Come on. I bet you can tell me at least some things about that defense.
I'll tell you this about it. I played an all-star game, the North-South Lions all-star game in 2002 in the summertime. And we were ahead by a touchdown, and actually one of our receivers dropped a pass that could have put us up two scores late in the game. Needless to say, they came back and got a two-point conversion, went ahead by one. And the last play of the game, we went on 40, I threw it in the end zone, Hail Mary, and we had three guys down there, and they picked it off. This safety who picked the ball off proceeded to talk some trash after the game and ends up playing on Shasta the next season. So that fall, so just a few months removed from this all-star game, he didn't play in the game, but he talked some trash during the week about how their quarterback was better than me, and then I proceeded to go out and had six touchdown passes and enjoyed shaking his hand at the end of – he was actually the last person in line for Shasta that day. Really enjoyed shaking his hand after that game. But I do remember they had a kid named Joe Ireland who played a little bit on both sides of the ball. Sean Botiford, one of our receivers who played in Green Bay, was our fourth receiver on that team, who's a freshman, but also played defensive back and locked down Joe Ireland, who was leading the state in receiving up until that point, and held him to, I believe, three catches that game. So big win for us. Just another Butte College win over Shasta.
Couple of quick ones here. Jessica wants to know, have you seen the sign from the girl in the stands about her cheating ex-boyfriend watching the game at home?
No.
Okay. That's made the rounds on the internet. Melanie, she held up a sign that said apparently her boyfriend cheated on her, so he didn't get to go to the game on Sunday night, and she apparently made the broadcast holding the sign that said, "My cheating ex-boyfriend is at home watching the game on the couch." It's pretty funny. I got to give her credit. Melanie wants to know, she's been browsing at Barnes & Noble and saw both Tim Tebow and Drew Brees have books out. Would you consider writing a book?
I'd consider it. I don't think that's going to happen, though.
Brian wants to know, if you could break one record while you're playing, obviously he saw the game last night, which record would you want to break and why?
Does it have to be a...
It could be any... You take it however
football?
You want. It's your show. Break whatever record you want. It did say playing, but it didn't say football, I suppose, so... This, you know.
No, I mean, That's kind of hard. I don't know. I'd like to. How about five Super Bowls? No quarterbacks ever won five Super Bowls.
I could have predicted that that would be your answer. And finally, this one from Lisa. Last week was Christmas. This week you're playing New Year's. What are your 2012 New Year's resolutions, and how did you fare with your resolutions from last year?
Bad, and I can tell you why. It's probably a mistake that a lot of us make. I didn't write them down. I kind of had them in my phone that I found, pretty recently, actually. But this year I'm going to write them down. I'm going to make sure I keep them with me. I have a few that I've thought about already. I'm going to continue to think about them this week. But one I definitely want to do is I want to read one book a month for 12 months. So I want to read through 12 books. I have about 20 books that I've gotten over the last 4 or 5 years as gifts or ones that I bought myself that I want to read. And I would like to get through these 20 books. There are various topics, from survival books to a Chuck Norris book, which I want to read, to self-help books, Christian living books. So
I just got Tony Dungy's book. The co-author is a friend of mine.
I've listened to Tony's actually on tape. I enjoy books on tape from time to time, on CD, I guess. But I listen
that
to
doesn't
Tony.
Count as reading.
Tony's first, but no, I would like to read one book a month for the next 12 months at least.
Well, we will talk again to you next year after whatever happens on Sunday on New Year's Day as the Packers take on the Lions. I'm assuming Mike McCarthy, while he lets you guys not go to the hotel for Christmas Eve, I'm guessing New Year's Eve you still have to go to the hotel.
Yes, probably. Happy New Year to you.
Are you? Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Are you when you're not having to work, are you a New Year's? I always thought New Year's is kind of amateur night, and it's not something that I want to be out during. What's your take on it?
Some really fun.
Give me one before we go.
Fun New Year.
One of your most fun New Year's before we go.
We used to live in Portland when I was growing up, and my first year out of high school, went up there to hang out with my, I'm still really good friends with a lot of people that I knew in junior high. Went up there in like the 30th of December, and one of our buddies had rented this house on the Oregon coast. Now the Oregon coast isn't like some amazing tourist spot, but it was a beach house. And about 25 people, 19-year-olds, went to this beach house, and we had a great time. I mean, there were a lot of juices and a lot of spritzers and good times. But it was just a lot of good friends, and we got to kind of – it was a good party, a lot of fun.
Well, enjoy your New Year's at the Team Hotel on Saturday night, and we will come back next week and talk about the Lions and the Packers' first-round bye as they get ready for their postseason run. You have been listening to the Aaron Rodgers Show.